And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see," and I saw, and behold, bad movie futures. Hello, bad movie lovers, and welcome to a special preview of Bad Movie Futures, the new members-only series here at Bad Movies We Love. What you're about to hear are the first 15 minutes or so of my conversation with Cam Sully from the Jacked Up Review Show podcast, and our conversation about Ronan Day-Lewis's Anemone from 2025. If you like what you hear and you want to become an official card-carrying member of the Resistance, stay tuned at the end of the preview for details on how to do that. I hope you enjoy the preview. Sully, welcome back, man. It's been a while. This is not the traditional, like, full red carpet rollout for Bad Movies We Love, but yeah, thanks for being here.
Always a delight, Nick. And thank you for just, like, suggesting these unusual topics. And it was just so funny how you reached out to me. You're like, you're the only guy I know who's seen this movie. I'm like, sure.
Well, of the few people that I sort of am, like, friendly with online that I know have seen it, you are definitely the only person who has acknowledged that they liked it. So you and I are the only two people that I know that are, like, positive on this movie. And when I first, just when I glanced at the ratings on IMDb and I threw it up on Twitter, I was a little surprised. I was like, okay, I didn't think it was going to be qualifying for this show. But yeah. I threw it up there. You were the only person to respond in the affirmative. So I was like, well, I feel like I have to take this opportunity because the word of mouth on the street is that this movie sucks and that nepotism is bad because Ronan Day-Lewis was able to make this movie. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but I'm glad to have a chance to talk about it because I don't think anybody else really is.
That's the other funny thing too. There are so many people who have seen a movie and you just wish they would actually take the time to, like, maybe leave a review on, like, Letterboxd or IMDb, because I've had a habit of this. I actually fell victim to it early on, where I would see people say, oh, well, 50 people think it sucks, I guess I better get with the bandwagon. It's like, no, but that's not what you feel in your gut, what you actually think. Don't cater someone else. If you think this is good, then start using your words and say something, but... or just say I'm in the minority. I thought it was a lot of fun, but I don't know why. But in this case, yeah, I was the only person in this theater. And
fair.
It's funny how you brought up nepotism to start off. I'm seeing a lot of that. That seems to be a selective kind of critique. Like, I saw people doing that with, like, Sosie Bacon and Smile.
Yes.
Some people hated that. Some people did like it. But I don't give a shit about nepotism if the person's talented. And
yeah.
This person had a lot of visuals that I'm sure would have been a perfect prime MTV kind of freaky music video look.
It's a good point. It's a good point. For the people that are listening, and I mean, obviously, this is going to be in the title, so you already know, but we're talking about
Anemone.
Anemone.
Yes, sorry. I'm terrible.
No, it's fine. So I was curious a little bit because when I had snapped the screenshot, I wasn't sure whether or not the numbers were going to go up or down by the time we scheduled this. And so it initially had a 5.9 IMDb, which is now down to a 5.7.
Sinking, isn't it?
But it had a Metascore of 54, which is now up to 55. So we kind of gained an entire point and only lost 0.2 on that. But it has a Rotten Tomatoes critic score of 59, an audience score of 56. It has a letterbox of 2.8. However, the lowly Google user review has a like percentage of 76%. So that actually gives us a total rating of 59.8. So it's right under the wire. And that kind of...
3.8 on Amazon Prime. Perfect.
Yeah. It kind of makes me feel like over time, the movie will find its audience and will not sort of be on the forefront of everybody's, like, online hit list, I would say, for for being like one of the bad movies. Because I honestly, like, I don't think this is a bad movie. I think you can look at the movie and be disappointed, and maybe that's because you love Daniel Day-Lewis and you wanted to see something from him that you didn't see. Maybe the movie has deficiencies, and that's fair. I mean, this is a first-time filmmaker at the end of the day. Like, I didn't expect it to be, you know, a first-at-bat home run kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I was interested because of the cast, because of the fact that Daniel Day-Lewis was coming back to work with his son. And for me, it wasn't something that was a turnoff in any way. Like, oh, he retired, he's past his prime, he shouldn't be doing this kind of situation. It's like, no, I'm glad he's back, like, wanting to work with your son in the industry that you love. I feel that that is completely fine with me. But how about you? Like, was there any hesitation because of the fact that it was his kid?
I mean, he could have changed his surname and no one would have done the work or cared. But
fair.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And in this case, this is the first time I've been hesitant to recommend a movie. And it wasn't because of the score. It was just, I was like, there's some triggering dark tales this man tells. Again, you don't see those disturbing events. It's all, but it's a stage play. It's totally an Elie Kazan. And everyone else is like, oh, how else would you describe the visions? I'm like, a very David Lynchian, but just mildly. Like, it's just, it's about a man having more than just a midlife crisis. He's having mental breakdowns and a coming to Jesus moment. But it is funny how if something doesn't get Oscar bait or have some religious undertone, people are like kind of hesitant to kind of just fully recommend something. And if anything, this is a movie these guys wanted to do just because they thought it was good. That's the only agenda. It wasn't, you know, it's through Focus Features, which picks up a lot of these indies. But yeah, it's not a movie made for regular Hollywood consumption. It's made for people who like art house kind of stuff. And yeah, I like, it's so funny. Like, my father just sees me get back from the movies. He's like, yeah. What do you think of this? And I was like, I really like it, but I can't recommend this to everybody. Like, if I recommended this to my sister, she would be like, that's too depressing. Good acting. If I recommended this to a few other people, it'd be like, again, wonderful, exquisite dialogue. But man, that really disturbed me. And then there'd be others who'd be like, oh, that's great. I want to see it again. That's really atypical of what I expect. So it is, like you said, I thought it was competent. There was like maybe a few transitions that were a little rough, and maybe I might have just sped that up or modified that a bit, like just kind of fading to black kind of stuff. But I can't think of any wasted scenery. I didn't feel like it was, for lack of a better word, emo or unorganized or needlessly gothic. I'm coming up empty on stuff. Like, I just don't feel like this person made this vision without any soul or concept.
I think that's fair. A lot of the criticism that I've read, a word that seems to like pop up a little bit, is like either empty or empty. Meandering. And
I'll give you meandering if you don't like it. Empty?
Yeah, so like,
there's visuals and you're saying that's empty?
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of wrap my head around like the basic consensus, because most of the people that I saw that said they didn't like it mostly sort of used it as a vehicle for like something like, oh, I wish my dad was famous so I could make shitty movies kind of thing. Oh, and so it wasn't really like a criticism of the film. It was more just like, I don't like this. And that's what I'm going to say about it. So, you know,
like, when I think of empty, I think of something that didn't make use of its time and had visuals, but they don't mean anything. Like something like maybe Rebel Moon, maybe, you know, just something where you got a lot of things happening and they don't have much to do with anything. Like, when you say empty, like, you were telling me, like, even if like something did happen, like, you are so unengaged, like, empty?
I think the word that I would assign to this movie is maybe contemplative. And
yeah, you know,
at a little over 2 hours, the majority of the movie sort of like has this feeling to it that there is something there. There's obviously a lot of backstory, a lot of history with these characters. And then does the resolution or does the end of the film, like, is that sort of earned? Does it reward the audience for all the contemplation that takes place up until then? And I think that's like at least a fair question and a fair assessment of how the film uses the equity that it builds with the characters to actually give us a payoff. And like, for me, this isn't a movie that necessarily requires payoff, so I don't like have that in
point
the back, like, of my mind.
No, that I'm glad you brought that up, because yeah, I mean, this is a slow burn kind of movie, and the payoff is kind of more of a, it will end, it will occur, but it's going to be off screen.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's when the movie ends. You know, it's either hit the fan or he's successful. That's the only way, one of two ways it could go. So, but I will give him credit. I was in suspense. You know, like, I did. I saw some people who said, I saw the trailer, not going to bother with it. I don't watch trailers. I've stopped doing that since 2012 because it's misleading and everything. So I don't know what they saw and what would mislead them. Now, I knew it was about some complex, you know, estranged family. That's all I knew going in, just looking at the synopsis and the talent involved. I think, oh, Sean Bean, you know, he's the estranged brother, is going to get back together with his brother. He's like, no, he's the uncle caring for Daniel Day-Lewis's family. And I was like, I thought that was a neat turnaround. It's like, why did you leave him? I'm like, whoa, what do you mean? Like, okay, so that was fun for me to have to pierce that together. That is even more powerful now that I can rewatch that, having that information, and now I can study the other details that are still lingering. And at the same time, I'm okay with some visions that may never make complete sense, but the whole shot of Daniel getting, he feels like his son is an embryo, literally calling to him for help, and I feel like the giant fish that he envisions, like, that is a take on the whole big fish, small pond kind of argument, I feel. And that's where he feels like that he is at this point in his life. He needs to, he's always counterattacked the world because he always feels like everybody's, you know, everybody's out to get him. And I just felt like that was kind of a good way of kind of bringing that point home. Is like, okay, well, I'm always going to be uncomfortable in this world. I've been comfortable in this forest, but even then, I don't really truly feel perfect and welcome and happy. I'm just sulking while I go in and, you know, fish and run around the beach. You know?
Well, it's like the use of the title anemone, like, it applies to the flower that grows outside like their family cabin, but it's also, you know, a sea creature. So you sort of have this tether between like the cabin and the beach, and like the city doesn't like play like a huge role in this, but I did find that
it could symbolize protection and evil. I was like, interesting. So it is, I guess the only downfall is, even though they don't necessarily say the name, they do feature the title flower briefly. So I guess maybe that might be the one misleading thing. They maybe needed a little more of the flower in the opening.
Maybe a little bit, but I mean, like, when you said this sort of like envisioning his son, like the vision of his son as like this sea creature, kind of like made me think of it in a slightly different way. It's like this thing that's kind of like inaccessible, it's at the depths, but it is sort of like it has this inherent sort of like beauty, or at least allure to it. So it's like he's caught between the idea of his son and like the practicality of being a father. And even more than that, there's like so much backstory here that, you know, this is
just the
brothers have the brothers have their issues, which like stem from their father, which they kind of get into a lot. You know, Ray was molested at the hands of like the pastor, the priest of their local parish. It's one of the first stories
that's very triggering.
Yeah, it's one of the first stories I've seen too, where it's telling a story about the Troubles period in Ireland that isn't told from the side of like the rebels. Right, this is from from the side of someone who sort of like was a cop. And I think he worked on like the bomb squad or something like that ultimately. But he was in the military on that side of the equation. It's one of the first times I've ever heard, maybe the first time I've ever seen a film that actually addresses that, where it's always the other way around. So I felt that that was a very specific choice to give to this character to sort of like begin to explain all the PTSD that this guy has that has forced him to live in the woods, abandon his family, and like really
want to talk about
really examine
victims.
That stuff.
You don't want to talk about the survivors. Like, yeah, they're out there. Some of them are still alive.
Thank you for checking out this preview episode of Bad Movie Futures. We're going to be starting with 2024 films, and the goal is to do at least one of these per month. But there are always new movies in the worst of the year crosshairs. So if the shoe fits, I'm happy to wear it. You can sign up for the members-only tier by clicking on the link in the show notes or going to badmovieswelove.captivate.fm/support. I hope to see you soon.